Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for February 15th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, and just for everybody in time for the 2015 year to kick back and swing, we have somebody coming back to the show that has done many, many hours on the Kudzu Vine, but haven't been on in over a year, and Catherine and I are probably more excited about this show than any we've been on in recent memory. Welcome back to the Kudzu Vine, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Good to have you back. Well, Tim, you know, Catherine and I guess we were hopeful a lot of this election season because we had really great candidates here in our state and a lot of other southern states, but on election day it was rough. You, Catherine, and I texted and emailed about a lot of this, but it wasn't shared with the guests. We've laid down our thoughts. Just kind of give us your thought on the current. We'll start out Georgia, then we'll kind of move up the ladder, if you will. What's your thoughts on the current Georgia political scene?
Well, not that hopeful, but still rather hopeful. You got to remember that in 2006, we lost the governor's race by 20 points. 4 years later, we lost it by 10. And last year, we lost it by 8. I actually thought we had a chance to pull either that or that U.S. Senate race out. I was working every day in the local election headquarters up here. And I tell you guys, about 2 weeks before the election, I suddenly felt the air go out of that thing. I'm not sure why then, but we just, you know, it seemed to be over to me right then. People quit coming into the headquarters. People quit talking about the election. It just all seemed to be over. We still got a lot of work to do here, and we just can't wait until demographics change and change it for us. So we got to get out there and really beat the bushes hard. It's going to be a long slog back, but I still think, you know, the first thing we're going to win is going to be a statewide race before we ever get close to taking the state legislature back or anything. We've got some work to do in this state, and with the Republicans having those huge majorities in the state legislature, it's going to be some tough sledding.
Yeah, well, Georgia is part of the South, but I get the sense that Georgia's a little more optimistic than other part. If you take the South in total, now obviously there's states like Florida, North Carolina, they're probably better than us, and you know, chances of Democrats winning, there's obviously a lot of states that are worse. Where do you see the South as a whole at this point?
Well, it's pretty red. The reason I'm hopeful there, though, is the election of 2016 is coming up. I've got to think if Hillary Clinton's at the top of the national ticket, this state we're sitting in is going to be a battleground state. I think within 5 points, as a matter of fact, I think Hillary Clinton stands an excellent chance of winning the state of North Carolina. I think Virginia is turning. You saw in the election last year, even with the Republican wave across the country, we held the line in a state like Virginia. Who would have thought the old Dominion state 20 years ago would have turned like that? But it has. I believe that state is in the process of going from purple to blue. And obviously, the Democrats stand a great chance in the state of Florida. next year. Some of the other states, I think it's going to be a while, but some social issues and things are turning in our favor now. And so I think that national election next year, if the polling is any indicator, is going to be very good to us even in the South.
Yep, and then final question on this little strand, nation as a whole.
Well, the nation as a whole, you look at all the elections since 2006, midterms, presidential. None of those elections have really been close. It just swings wildly back and forth. I really wish our voters would come out in midterm elections. I mean, there were actually less people voted in Georgia last year than there were in 2010. You know, we're not going to win like that. Again, nationally next year, I think we're going to make some gains back. I really got some hopes for the U.S. Senate. I think we'll pick up a little handful of House seats. So I feel pretty good about it. So, again, it all depends heavily on who's at the top of the ticket.
On both sides.
Yes, it does. It does. But especially on our side. Because Hillary Clinton just makes all the difference in the world.
Yes, and talking about that presidential race, just to let folks know, I mean, you probably read it already, different places posted about the show, Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling will be on with us within a few minutes, roughly 20 minutes into the podcast, if you're listening that way. But that gives us a few more minutes to cover another topic. Now, this is something, Catherine, you and I spoke with Martin Weinberg of Alabama recently. I think you and I may have mentioned it last week even, when Drew Pritt was on the show. But there was an article in Politico said Alabama, the GOP's Alabama problem. And I remember we talked about Roy Moore. And, you know, I guess Martin had the sense that Roy Moore may have kind of mellowed a bit, not only changed his opinions, but not necessarily wanting to be spoiling for a fight. Well, Roy Moore was Roy Moore and decided to spoil for a fight. And that's really created an issue for the GOP as far as the way this looks. I mean, it looks like George Wallace. It looks like the 1950s and 60s all over again, just on a different, somewhat different issue with a different population. How big a problem is this for the GOP, Catherine?
Pardon? I'm sorry. I missed the question.
Well, the article in Politico, how big a problem is, gay marriage, gay rights, for the GOP, looking that Alabama is become front and center in this thing?
I think it's a big problem for them. I think, marriage equality is becoming much more acceptable and much more in demand across the country. What is it, 39 states now or something? It's a lot. And it makes them look like, backwoods. It makes them look backwards. It makes them look, plus, to deny federal court, the decision of a federal court, makes them just look obstinate and unruly. And I think it's a problem for them, for their national brand, because it's not just, I think that it was interesting the way the article pointed out that this is really not a left and right issue. It's a generational issue. It's like over 40 and under 40. Over 40, Republican. Over 40, there are more people that are opposed to marriage equality. But under 40, it's an overwhelming number of Republicans and Democrats who support marriage equality. So if they're trying to, encourage the younger generation coming up to be Republicans, they're losing that battle by, being against this important issue of marriage equality.
Yeah, Tim, I sent you the article the same time as Catherine. It was the first topic I sent, if you will. What's your thoughts? Is this a huge problem for
the GOP, and then also Alabama. I mean, we can get into that as well. Is how does this make Alabama as a state look?
Well, right now, and just for right now, mind you, this sort of thing, this thumbing your nose at the federal government, it might be beneficial in the short term to some local and statewide politicians on the Republican side in this region of the country. Even in the presidential primaries, I think these candidates could make some hay with the old abusive, overreaching government line. But this particular issue, gay marriage, it probably won't be the hot-button issue in 2016 that it once was. That's because the ship is already sailed. It's over. There's 37 states, you know, now, where it's legal. Naturally, this state is one where it's not. There may be a few Roy Moore types bleeding about this, but it really is over. That being said, there is a history, David, a blowback to this type of thing. There was the civil rights, Nixon with his, Southern strategy. There certainly has been resistance to Roe v. Wade, of course, in 42 years. And there'll be some to this, too. Will it manifest itself in the form of votes? Not likely. And I don't think later either, because the polls show what Catherine alluded to, that young GOP voters support gay rights at about the same rate as their Democratic counterparts. So I think we're going to quickly segue off of something like gay rights when the Supreme Court finally, makes a national ruling. And the next big fight, I think, is going to be global warming. just my thought.
Yeah, and then there's some polling that Tom Jensen has on that he let loose. We might can ask about that in a minute. So, yeah, I think this is something that it just makes – I think in some ways the GOP can probably figure out how to nuance this thing with different candidates in different regions to not completely tear up their brand. I think it really hurts Alabama, and it's kind of like, here we go again, the state that was 49th or 50th, depending on how you look at it, and, civil rights in a lot of ways now, and, marriage equality and gay rights and all that. They're right down there at the bottom. I guess if Roy Moore passes his way, they're going to be a hard 50 because other states are not. I mean, there's really no other state I could compare right now with them. I guess Arkansas is making a few moves, but they're further along, so it's not really fair to Arkansas. So, it'd just be interesting to see how it unfolds, but I think time will march forward. And, Catherine, you're absolutely right. One of the biggest takeaways in that article was the fact that under 40, over 40 had a big deal of difference. I'm sure also – where you live, like in more urban centers, you may be more likely to be accepting of gay rights. And so all that we'll figure in. Well, go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was just going to ask you, why exactly has Alabama jumped the gun on us in this? Why is Georgia not doing something? Aren't we supposed to be the Empire State of the South or whatever happened to that?
Well, I think that was the court cases is how they come up, but then it's how you react to the court case. If the court case comes up and you just go, okay, that's what the court says, then you're going to look one thing. It's just when you stand in the courthouse door, you tell the probate judges, don't do this or do this. That's when you, change the complexion of things, and that's what – I mean, Alabama had the opportunity to go, well, we don't agree with it, but that's what the law says, and could have just kind of let it move on and not made as big a deal of it. And I say Alabama, I'm talking about those politicians that were conservative that felt they had to, protect their brand with the their conservative constituents. Well, let's continue to kind of move through. There's other topics I had that I think are more important, but I think this one we can cover quicker. Before Tom calls in. And was this morning, I happened to see something about
Tim McGraw had an article where he said, you know, I'm a Blue Dog Democrat. I support the president, me and my wife, Faith Hill. We're supportive of the president's policies, like what he's doing for America and all this. And then the headline said, you know, country music fans revolt against Tim McGraw. So I read this thinking, well, I'm going to see all these country music fans revolting. Didn't see anything in the article. I think the author of the article, and I don't know, I'm not familiar with the publication, Tell Me Now, and I say publication, it's my website, that's where it was, that printed this response, at least to this article. It seemed like they were mad about Tim McGraw being a Democrat. Catherine, we've known for a while Tim McGraw's a Democrat, because I think we've discussed about him running for U.S. Senate from Tennessee before. So to me, this is old news. But really, I know back, you know, it's been nearly 10 years now, the way DJs treated the Dixie Chicks. It seems like somebody's trying to get that going with Tim McGraw. I don't see this heck thing have any legs. I sure hope it doesn't. Do you think that there'll be some kind of backlash against Tim McGraw and then maybe in turn Faith Hill?
Well, it seems to me that, you know, the general demographic of a country music fan should be a Democrat, right? I mean, I think it's a work. It's working class music. I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to offend anyone. But I mean, isn't that, you know, it's the pickup truck and the, you know, tough boss and the going out drinking after your job. And I mean, it seems to me that those people that are listening to, that country music speaks to, should be voting for Democrats anyway. They're working class people. So, I mean, it seems natural that the performers would be Democrats to me. I think Johnny Cash was a Democrat.
Yeah, there are probably
and
a lot of them.
Could you be more country
that,
music than Johnny Cash? I mean, real seriously.
Yeah, well, Willie Nelson, too. We know about Willie Nelson.
Yeah, exactly.
You look at most demographic groups and you look at the economics of the thing and everything else. You probably would see the majority of most people other than, you know, extremely wealthy folks, which a lot of them are Democrats, but they're not voting just on monetary issues and taxation issues,
right.
Should be Democrats, and it cuts across.
Well, everybody
color.
Should be Democrats. We all know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you will see that there are some folks based on if they're not they're voting on certain issues, yeah, they're going to be more Republican, but you don't put together, you know, big majorities with those groups. Tim, you read the article as well. I mean, do you think this was just somebody with a bone to pick that has an internet size, or is there more to it?
I've seen just a little handful of people do it on, like, Facebook and stuff, too, say stuff about it. But, you know, you mentioned, of course, he's a Democrat. That's no big secret. You know who else is a Democrat? It's Garth Brooks. He performed at Obama's inauguration, for crying out loud. Anybody going to say he's not country? You know, and, of course, Willie Nelson, Faith Hill. The country music has its share of Democrats. I don't think this is going to be such a big thing. And I want to go to a broader subject on this here. Why would you base your taste in entertainment, what you like to look at and listen to, why would you base that on the politics of the person that you're listening to?
Oh, I do it all the time, Tim.
I don't know. I don't, you know,
I do.
Charlton Heston's one of the great actors in the history of Hollywood. So
I've only
John
ever seen
Wayne.
One Charlton Heston movie. My mother wouldn't let me watch Charlton Heston movies.
Oh, really? I've seen
I've never seen a John Wayne movie.
Really?
Really?
He's a terrific actor. You know, Walter Brennan was a terrific actor. No, but those people were all Republicans. Well, I don't care when they're on the screen. I don't care. I don't care. You know, I know people that don't like Barbara Streisand because she's a Democrat. Well, I think that's silly. The woman is a great singer. Their politics and what they do for a living are two different things.
Well, I guess for me, it's the same reason that I don't shop at Walmart and that I don't buy pizza from Domino's and, you know, I don't want to support their, especially the ones who are outspoken and obviously funding some of these big, you know, campaigns. Like, I, until I found out that Jim Caviezel was a crazy right-wing wacko, I loved him. I thought he was fantastic in The Count of Monte Cristo, but I will not watch him. He's on a TV show that everybody likes. I won't watch him.
But I think
it's different people respond to it differently.
Yeah, but actors plying their trades a little bit different to me than, you know, Walmart and what they do about paying people a living wage and stuff like that. I mean, I'm going to admit it. I have the Cat Scratch Fever album, you know. Sorry, but I do.
Well, and I guess we have to pick this back up here in a little bit. You know, and I think movies are trickier than albums, because then you might have a Democrat playing against a Republican in a movie, and I mean, you know,
well, that's true.
And then you don't want to watch Reagan, but what if Bonzo's a big Democrat? I mean, you know, it's bedtime. You got to watch that thing. So, but anyway, let's get a little serious here. Tom Jensen's going to wonder what's going on our show. We're talking about all movies, and it's not even, Academy Awards night. Well,
almost.
Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, welcome back to the show for the umpteenth time.
Hey, good to be with you all.
Yeah, good to have you back. I know the election, y'all did a ton of polls before it, and then after, you kind of had to catch your breath, and then it seems like you've gotten back in the groove. You had a national poll come out, really looking at the presidential race. That's been a few weeks ago, but it's still pretty current, and it's obviously one of the more in-depth ones we've had. Tell us a little about your findings. I guess you can start on the Democratic side or the Republican side.
Well, sure. On the Republican side, what we found in our last national poll really was that the, you know, Republican presidential field's about as piled up as it could be. A bunch of people pulling really close to each other with nobody really breaking away from the field. One thing that was interesting about that poll was it was the first national poll that found Scott Walker polling in double digits. And then the day after we released that poll, the Des Moines Register poll came out showing him ahead in Iowa. And then since that time, there have also been a few polls showing him ahead in New Hampshire. And we're going to have a South Carolina poll this week that shows that South Carolina at this point, Walker and Jeb Bush are at the top of the heap. So that was the most interesting thing about that poll, was it was sort of the first sign that maybe Scott Walker was building up some momentum. And certainly there have been a lot of subsequent signs that Walker is the momentum candidate right now as well. What's going to be interesting to see is if this is going to be like the 2012 presidential race, where a different Republican candidate had momentum every month, and having the momentum a year away from the first vote wasn't necessarily a good thing, or if Walker's going to be able to sustain this a lot more than a lot of those folks who were sort of surging at various times in 2011.
Yeah, well, let's kind of get into Scott Walker. You're right, that was the first time your poll found that. Some ways I don't find that real surprising, just given the hardcore Republican electorate. But as you did your polling, did you find there were reasons for Scott Walker being so popular?
Well, I think what he has going for him, there's been this tension in several of the recent presidential elections for the Republicans between do we nominate somebody who has a really strong conservative record, or do we nominate somebody who's electable and who has the ability to win in the general election? I think what Walker has going for him is he can make the argument that he's both the strongest conservative candidate and the most electable candidate. You look at him on the electability front, he's won three governor's races in Wisconsin in just over 4 years, so a pretty impressive record for a Republican in a state that has not voted hasn't voted Republican for president in a while. But at the same time, he's achieved that electoral success despite pursuing a very strong conservative agenda. So I think what he can go out and say to these Republican primary voters is, I've shown that I can be real conservative, be very solid on our issues, and still win elections. And I think that's kind of what he has going for him right now.
Yeah, I'm going to ask one more question. I'll follow up on this before I pass it along to Tim and Catherine. And the first question, or the question I had was both on Scott Walker and on Rand Paul. Scott Walker is pretty much known he does not have a college degree. And then Rand Paul, there's been some questions about if he has a college degree. I'm going to ask you, if you're polling Sean or you just have a gut instinct, how much does a lack of a college degree in 2015 matter to the American public?
We haven't polled on it specifically, but my sense is that this will not end up being much of an issue. I don't think voters care. The kind of voters who do care, I think, probably are, you know, sort of hardcore partisans who aren't really going to change which party they vote for over something like this. But when you think about that group of voters who's sort of persuadable, and of course there's so few of them, it's only 10-15% of the electorate, because so many voters are hardwired now into either always voting Democratic or always voting Republican, I don't think that is going to be the determiner for that small number of voters in the middle. So I think, you know, it's something they're talking about right now, 21 months before the election. But at the end of the day, I don't think it'll be a very big deal. It's a good idea for a polling question, though. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Oh, yes. Well, Tim, I'm going to pass it to you for any questions on particular the Republican primary for president, and then we'll go to Catherine from there.
Well, good evening, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great, Tim. It's always good talking with you.
Yeah, and how's that Hills baseball team looking so far?
Well, they're off to a real good start, and that's a good thing because our basketball team's left a little bit to be desired this weekend.
Yeah, yeah, and you got Duke this week, too. You better straighten up in a hurry. Anyway, on this national thing, I've noticed in your polling, obviously Bush has really dropped back to the pack, and Chris Christie has faded badly. What's happened to those two guys?
Well, Jeb Bush, it's really interesting. We've seen a precipitous drop in his favorability rating since he really sort of announced in mid-December that he was going to run. And I think the reason for that is I think Republican voters, for the most part, just sort of assumed, well, if he's a Bush, he's, you know, got a real strong conservative record, da-da-da-da-da. So they said they liked him before he announced he was running. Since he announced he was running, there's been so much attention to the fact that he support Common Core, which Republican voters hate, that he's taken a more moderate tack on immigration than a lot of Republican voters would care for. So really what we've seen with Bush is that the more scrutiny there's been of his record, sort of the less enthusiastic that voters have been about him, at least on the Republican primary side. Chris Christie, I think you have a few things going. Part of it's the same sort of issues as Bush, being too moderate, people still being mad about him, you know, getting his picture taken with Obama and the Hurricane Sandy aftermath and that kind of thing. I also think a lot of what's causing trouble for Christie is that people just don't like him. They kind of think he's a jerk. You know, the main thing he's made news for over the last couple months is being a big Cowboys fan. The Cowboys continue to be the most hated football team in America. So you kind of just look at all of those things together, and we're really finding that Republican voters don't like Christie. We find that more Republicans dislike him than like him. So that's not a very good place to be starting a presidential campaign.
So then, is there no clear favorite right now for the nomination? Because Republicans really love to nominate favorites.
I think there are two favorites, which is Bush and Walker. I think they definitely start out sort of at the top of the heap, but there's no certainty that'll end up being one of those guys. But sort of when you look at people who seem like plausible presidents and that sort of thing, they stand out from the Ted Cruz's and Ben Carson's and Rand Paul's of the field as, I think, being people that people at least can see, oh, you know, that person really could be president. Whereas some of these other Republican candidates, I think voters look at them and say, well, I might like some of what you have to say, but the idea of you actually being in the White House is kind of absurd.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you, sir. Catherine?
I want to pick up a little bit on that. Thanks so much for being on tonight. We really appreciate
sure.
it. We always enjoy talking with you. I noticed in your recap of your January 30th poll that you gave a big win to Ben Carson, and you just mentioned him. Do you think there's any, like, I just am surprised at how popular he is. I occasionally listen to the sort of right-wing radio, and not very often, but occasionally. And they
sure.
love him, right? They love him. They love to talk about how great he is. I think it's somehow helps them deny not liking the president just because he's black.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
do you think there's any chance that someone like Ben Carson could rise? I'm not necessarily as a presidential candidate, but as a vice presidential candidate, or is this just sort of eyewash?
No, I think that people should be taking Ben Carson more seriously than they are. I think a lot of people, and this is probably especially true of the media and of liberal people, I think a lot of people look at Ben Carson and say, oh, this is just Herman Cain all over again, based mostly just on the color of their skin. And I think Ben Carson does have more substance than Herman Cain did. I thought one thing that was kind of telling in terms of Carson potentially being more serious than Cain was when this whole vaccination controversy happened a couple weeks ago. Carson stood up and said, this is ridiculous. Of course vaccination should be mandatory, and talked about that from the perspective of his being a doctor and that sort of thing. And that's something you never would have seen Herman Cain doing when he was running. He would have always just sort of tried to take the most out there position possible. So certainly we're finding that Republican voters really like Ben Carson. And so far, he's polling better with Democrats and independents than the other Republicans are. That's mostly because they don't really know who he is. But definitely, I think in a wide open field, Carson might be a more serious contender than we think. As you say, not necessarily to be the nominee, but certainly to be someone who may be a more important political figure in the years ahead.
Well, thank you. That's kind of what I felt, how I feel. I think we underestimate his potential to be a national
sure.
leader.
Yeah.
Thank you. David?
Yeah. I think y'all are right, a brain surgeon. I mean, you know, whatever you think of it, somebody's politics, that's impressive, irregardless. Well, this is one state that hasn't gotten really a lot of attention polling-wise, and I was going to ask you about that. The state of Alabama, all the states that pretty much had governor's races and Senate races were exit polls. Alabama was not. There wasn't a lot of polls going on beforehand. Now Alabama's in the news. They've been brought to the forefront of, you know, marriage rights and the gay rights and what have you. And is there any sense that either your company or other groups are going to come in and try to poll Alabama and get a better sense of that state?
No, I unfortunately think there's just not quite enough action there to do Alabama unless some organization with really a stake in the gay marriage fight decided to commission a poll in Alabama or something, you might see something. But you're right, that is definitely one of the least polled states. I think the last time we did a full-scale statewide Alabama poll was in early 2010 when the governor's race was open and there were hotly contested primaries on both the Democratic and Republican side. We have done polls about gay marriage in Mississippi and Louisiana, and based on that, I think support for gay marriage in Alabama is probably around 30%. But what's kind of interesting in a lot of these states that don't like gay marriage, where they've already had it legalized, and North Carolina is a good example of this, in North Carolina, only 39% of voters in 2012 voted against the amendment to ban gay marriage in the state constitution. But when we asked people, has gay marriage being legal in North Carolina had a positive or negative impact on your life, or has it not mattered at all? We find that 70% of voters say it's either had a positive impact or no impact at all. So even though 61% of voters just 3 years ago voted to ban it in the state constitution, only 30% are saying that it's being legal is actually really a problem for them. So when I think when you look at a state, even like Alabama, that's one of the most conservative in the country when it comes to social issues, I think most voters, once gay marriage really is completely up and running in the state, once we get past all the sort of drama going on right now, I think most voters are going to say, yeah, it's actually not that big of a deal. Because that's what we've been finding everywhere where it becomes legal, is that even most of the people against it will admit to you when you ask them that it hadn't really been that big of a deal.
Shocker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really the truth. I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking on it, but really the folks that it matters to, it matters a lot. And then for the most people, it just doesn't have a big impact. So they shouldn't be so concerned about it in a negative way a lot of times. Well, I kind of
sure.
glossed over the Democratic side, and then, of course, the general election part of the poll, the general election part, being something certainly we couldn't gloss over. Let me pass it back to Tim and kind of redirect us and talk about either one of those, Tim.
Well, yeah, I would like to talk about the Democratic side of things, and I want to just assume for a moment that Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee. Now, you're sitting
sure.
in the middle of the state of North Carolina, maybe just
yep.
a little east, but kind of in the middle. If Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, based on what you're seeing, will North Carolina be a state that she could win next year?
Absolutely. What we've been consistently finding in our North Carolina presidential polling for 2016 is that no matter who the Republican nominee is, Hillary Clinton's either up by 1 or 2 points against him or down by 1 or 2 points against him. So North Carolina definitely looks like it would continue to be a swing state, really in keeping with the last two presidential elections. In both 2008 and 2012, North Carolina was the second closest state in the country. And it looks like definitely if Hillary Clinton runs and is the nominee, there's the potential for that to happen again next year. And this wasn't our poll, but there was a poll from one of the universities in Virginia that came out this week that showed Hillary Clinton up by 5 or 6 points against the Republicans in Virginia. That's consistent with what happened in 2008 and 2012. So in both North Carolina and Virginia, what you saw happen the last two presidential elections was a big departure from the historical norm. A Democrat hadn't won North Carolina since 1976, a Democrat hadn't won Virginia since 1964, but it's really starting to look like these states are going to consistently be pretty close. And even though it was a little bit of a disappointment in Georgia this last year, where things looked for most of the year like they were going to be closer than they ended up being, I still think longer term we're moving towards Georgia sort of joining North Carolina and Virginia as being one of these southern states that's pretty competitive.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Because you've polled this state lately, even though it's not in the South, I wanted to ask about it. Because most people think, well, you take the states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. Win two of those three, you're probably president. You've done some recent polling up in Pennsylvania. Now, some of my conservative friends up there in that region of the country have said there's no way a Republican is going to win in a presidential race in Pennsylvania right now. No matter what the polling shows, Pennsylvania is fool's gold. Are they right in assuming that?
Well, I think so far away from the presidential election, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's impossible for Republicans to win there, but Certainly when we polled the state last month, we found that Hillary Clinton led the potential Republicans by 10 to 15 points in the state.
Yes.
And then a couple weeks ago, Quinnipiac released a poll in Pennsylvania also and found very similar sorts of numbers to us, that that Hillary Clinton was up by 10 to 15 points in the state. So it would have to take a big movement against the Democrats over the last couple years of Obama's presidency for Pennsylvania to be on the board for Republicans. And if Pennsylvania is on the board for Republicans, then Clinton probably lost already. It's the kind of state that Republicans don't need it to get to 270. It would probably be icing on their cake, much as North Carolina would be icing on the Democrats' cake. It's like Democrats do have a decent chance to win North Carolina, but if they win North Carolina, they're already won overall. North Carolina's not going to be your 270th electoral vote, and it's the same thing for Pennsylvania and the Republicans.
Oh, that makes great sense. Catherine?
I'm sorry. I don't have a question. I feel like we covered a lot of stuff, but I bet David does.
Well, yes, you, Tom, you had recently released a North Carolina poll that didn't just have presidential numbers, but had other things as well. I guess you got a governor's race coming up and a Senate race. What did you find in that North Carolina poll?
So what we're finding in both the governor's race and in the Senate race in North Carolina is that the incumbent Republicans are not terribly popular. We've pretty much, for the last year and a half with Governor McCrory, we usually find about 40% of voters approve of him, about 45% disapprove. His numbers have been pretty consistent for a while now. And then with Senator Richard Burr, what we generally find is about a third of voters approve of him, about a third of voters disapprove of him, and about a third of voters don't have an opinion either way. So just based on the approval numbers, you would expect these guys to be pretty vulnerable. But what we're finding right now is they're each up by about 5 or 6 points. They're pulling in the mid-40s, so it's not like they're out of the woods, but I would say they're both favored for re-election. Governor McCrory has, I think, a strong opponent in Attorney General Roy Cooper, but he's still up by 5 points right now. It's kind of interesting. It's sort of a prism into how closely voters pay attention to things like statewide offices below governor in the Senate, because even though Roy Cooper's been Attorney General of North Carolina for 14 years, we find that he barely has 50% name recognition. So a big part of why McCrory's up by 5 points, despite not being that popular, is that a lot more Democrats than Republicans are undecided because they don't know Roy Cooper. They don't like Pat McCrory, but they don't know Cooper either. So right now they're saying they're undecided. In the Senate race, it's interesting that even though Burr has pretty mediocre approval numbers, there really aren't any Democrats who have sort of said that they really want to run against Burr. Like, there's literally none. So we've just sort of been testing hypothetical candidates against him for now. A lot of Democrats would like former Senator Kay Hagan to come back and try to get back in the Senate by winning this seat, but right now, we find that Burr would lead her by 6 points. She still has pretty high negatives from the election last year. I thought maybe those would start to sort of wear off a little bit now that the attack ads haven't been running for the last 3.5 months, but it's still taking some time for her to recover. And then we've been also testing State Treasurer Janet Cowell, Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox, former Congressman Mike McIntyre. Those folks are all down to Burr by 7 to 10 points. That's not terribly surprising because none of them have more than 30-40% name recognition. So I think both the governor's race and the Senate race will end up being pretty close, but at least starting out, the Republicans are favored to get reelected.
Yes, and also you had alluded to a South Carolina poll. That poll's not been released yet, but I got to ask, are there any numbers you can kind of preview from that poll?
Yeah, there's a couple different angles that we're looking at in this poll that are kind of interesting. One of them is just simply how conservative the Republican primary electorate is. There was a big sort of flap this week about whether Scott Walker believed in evolution or not, and he wouldn't really say that he did believe in evolution. And when you poll a state like South Carolina and look at what the Republicans think, you can see why these candidates are hesitant to say that they believe in evolution, because what we're finding is that Republican primary voters in South Carolina don't believe in evolution. We asked them what they think about global warming. They really don't believe in global warming. We asked them if they thought Christianity should be made the national religion. They do think Christianity should be made the national national religion, just, you know, essentially sort of invalidating the principles the country was founded on. So we are finding that Republican voters are very conservative on all of these issues, and it helps explain why these Republican presidential candidates are so hesitant to sort of take a stand on pretty basic things like believing in evolution and global warming. So that's one aspect of the poll that's interesting. The other thing that's kind of interesting is there's been a lot of attention in South Carolina recently to the use of guns in domestic violence incidents and the possibility of banning people with a restraining order against them for domestic violence from purchasing guns, and even to make them give up the guns that they have to turn them back in. And we're finding that voters in South Carolina are pretty strongly supportive of both of those ideas, even though it's such a conservative state. And I think what that speaks to, and this is something that we've found a lot of places over the last 2 years, is that most voters do support sort of common sense gun legislation, things like background checks, things like don't let domestic abusers buy guns, those kinds of things. The power of the NRA does a good job of killing those things, but we definitely find that they're pretty popular if you just sort of take it straight to the people.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. Now, after South Carolina, what other states do you have coming up?
Well, we're due this coming week for the national poll that we do every month, and then the week after that we'll be due to go back to North Carolina, which we do every month. And then after that, I think we'll be focusing on some of the key Senate races probably for next year. One interesting set of polls we released this week that, because we did them for a private client, we didn't put them on our website, but people might be interested in. We polled Illinois, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania on the immigration issue, and in the course of that looked at their senators' approval ratings. All four of those states have Republican incumbent senators who were elected for the first time in 2010, so it's first-term people running for re-election for the first time. And, of course, 2010 was a really good year for Republicans, which is why some of these Republican senators were able to get in states that voted for Obama a couple times. And what we found about all four of those Republican senators is that their approval ratings are stuck in the 30s, which is definitely sort of a dangerous place to be 4 years into your first term. So I think some of the things we'll focus on in the coming weeks and months is doing more in-depth polling about those Senate races and seeing what Democrats would be good candidates to challenge those Republican incumbents and which ones wouldn't.
Well, yes, and I want to kind of get off politics for one quick second. You did a lot of football polling around the Super Bowl, and this is sort of related to sports and football. PSL, personal seat licenses, they were the first NFL stadium, if I'm not mistaken, to have them was in Charlotte in the mid-90s. And it seems like every new stadium that shows up has at least some. Have y'all done any polling, and what have you found about the popularity of personal seat licenses?
That isn't something we've done any polling about, and my guess is that if we did poll about it, it's probably something that most voters as a whole aren't really familiar with as a concept, because the number of people who really are football ticket buyers, NFL ticket buyers, is a pretty small share of the electorate. So it might be an interesting thing to look into sometime, but it's one of those issues where my intuition tells me that we would get a really high percentage of voters just saying, not sure, don't know enough to have an opinion.
I could understand that. Well, before I let you go, Tim, Catherine, any more questions for Tom Jensen?
Well, I'm just going to throw it out there, Tom. If Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee based on your polling, is she the odds-on favorite to capture the presidency?
She's the favorite. I don't think she's the odds-on favorite. I think that this is going to be a close presidential election. I think a lot of people are maybe getting a little too overconfident by some of these early national polls, maybe showing Hillary up by 10 points or whatever. A lot of that is because she's so much better known than the potential Republican candidates. So I'm going to say, I think if Hillary Clinton's the Democratic nominee on February 15th, 2015, I think I'd give her a 55% chance of getting elected. So I think it's better than even odds, but I think that people who say that she's an overwhelming favorite or that kind of thing, I think caution is prudent.
Oh, sounds good.
Thank you.
David?
So we have work to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's always work to do. The
right.
Best way to have things go wrong is to take them for granted.
Exactly.
As you all well know.
Very true. Well, Tom Jensen, thanks again for being on the Kudzu Vine. If folks want to read Tom's polls and look for that South Carolina poll result sometime this week, publicpolicypolling.com, any other places they can find you?
No, that's the best place to go.
Yes, if you like crosstabs, Tom's site is the polls to read. Well, thanks again, Tom.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
It's always great to be with you all. Okay, take
great
care.
Great to have you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, that is one thing. I'll tell you what, when you go on his site, I mean, they don't hide information. It's easy to download. They give you all the questions. Then when you get Tom on the show, he tells you stuff that's not even on the site. So anytime Tom Jensen's going to be on, definitely worth a listen because you're probably going to hear a few things that you're not going to see on the site. Because it's just a different format and it lends itself to that. So once again, thanks to Tom Jensen. I think we got time to do it. Maybe one more topic, and this is one that's kind of national, but I think kind of pertinent. This past week, Brian Williams, NBC News anchor, made headlines in a negative way. Some ethical issues based on his reporting. You can read about that real quick somewhere else because it takes a while to get into. And in the same week, Jon Stewart. Announced he was leaving The Daily Show. And you know, they've had other hosts. Craig Kilborn, among others, has done The Daily Show. So that show and the format can keep on. But my question to y'all would be, given that we have three 24-hour news channels, I guess in some ways we could even say four, depending on how you count headline news and Al Jazeera and all that. You have four networks that have news sites and all. Would it be possible, let's say NBC News said, well, ABC, CBS, Fox, if they choose to do it, a nightly news, they can cover the nightly news. What if we were to take The Daily Show, put it on at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and present it that way? Of course, if something happened to where that format was not appropriate, we could just flip over to MSNBC and cover it more in that fashion. But they already have SNL. Which does much like The Daily Show and has been doing it for like four decades now. And we know these TV stations all thrive on ratings and eyeballs and the ability to sell commercials. Catherine, is this even a viable option should NBC want to pursue it, or would it be so frowned upon it would blow up in their face?
I think it would be very frowned upon. I mean, I think that we all sort of – elevate news. We have an expectation of serious news, and I think that's why Brian Williams took such a terrible hit on this in this situation. So I think to replace Brian Williams with a comedian or a comedy show, I've been shocked to learn how many people take Jon Stewart, you know, get their news from Jon Stewart. I think that it would be, I think it would harm sort of the reputation of NBC more than it's been harmed by this situation with Brian Williams.
Tim, I understand completely what Catherine's saying. The only reason I guess I venture this question is the study that came out several years ago that showed that people that watch The Daily Show are better informed about current events viewers of Fox News. Obviously, it is satire. It's tongue-in-cheek. But somehow the people that watch it have a better grasp upon the news than Fox viewers.
Tim, what
do you think?
That's because of who they are. Your average Fox viewer is over the age of 60. A lot of them are retired people that are not out in the workplace anymore. A lot of the younger viewers watch Comedy Central, a lot of students, a lot of professional, young professional people that are really up to snuff on current events. I don't think they learn extra things on a show like Stewart's. I watched it for the entertainment value. The guy was hilarious. I love black comedy, irreverent comedy now. I mean, something like Saturday Night Live or Stewart or Colbert or Bill Maher. But no, on NBC or one of the major networks, Maher had an excellent little chat with America about that the other night. If anything, the news needs to get more serious. They've got 22 minutes to give us the news of the day. And I just don't think a show like Stewart's would be what we need to do there. Years ago, David, you might remember, Maher himself was on network television with Politically Incorrect, and it didn't fly as well as it has on cable, where he obviously has more liberties to present the type of show he was looking to do. So,
yes, and like I said, I'm just posing the question because these things happened at the same time. NBC has an opening. They obviously now have a flawed brand that they'll have to rebuild anyway. I mean, this comes on the heels of going through, I guess, two Meet the Press hosts in a short time because David Gregory didn't work out.
I think the better question is, could Brian Williams be the host of The Daily Show? But I'm rooting for Tina Fey. I'm rooting for Tina Fey.
Well, and her career may actually be kind of too big, and I think she did an excellent job on SNL's news, but her career might actually hurt her from doing as many movies. She writes a lot of movies as well, so she might kind of be they might need to find the next Tina Fey. And then Brian Williams, it's kind of he's really good when they do his little clips on I want to say Jimmy Kimmel, but it's Jimmy Fallon
that will
do the rap songs with his lyrics. And that's some of his best work, and it's really not his work at all.
Wow!
And then of course his daughter's made a lot of attention. You know, got a lot of attention for things in her acting career recently, and so that's kind of brought him in the limelight too. Although this is unrelated.
Yeah, where does that leave Williams now?
I'm almost assume it would be a matter of time until he's out. I wonder if they could talk Tom Brokaw into coming back and play doing a month while they figure out who they want to go with, and maybe people would tune in for that month to see Tom Brokaw. Then they give the new person a chance because a lot of times I think TV news viewing is kind of habitual. You just, I'm going to watch the Channel 2 local news, and then I'm going to watch CBS's national news, whatever it may be. And so you got to kind of get that habit viewer more than anything else, and they may be fixing to get people to change, and if they're watching ABC or CBS every night, they're going to lose that. Just like I've never understood why Fox didn't have their own little network news that they throw on to try to – I mean, I'm kind of glad they don't because of kind of how they inform viewers, but I've always been shocked that they don't.
Yeah, but
I'm really
Falcon
sad about this because I did like Brian Williams. I don't watch nightly news, but I did like him. I thought he had a, you know, like an authenticity about him that apparently was not always the case. But I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in his in how he behaved, but I'm also disappointed that he won't be on because I do think he was a interesting guy. And
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, this goes in, and Tim can appreciate this being a Georgia Tech fan with George O'Leary. I think if you took everybody that didn't embellish something to further their career, you could take all those people and they could meet in a phone booth. And that didn't excuse what Brian Williams did. But I think people, a lot of folks, when they think about, oh, this or that, they're going to be shocked how many people actually have not done something on the scale of Brian Williams, but something that was not 100% earnest and honest
absolutely.
To help their career. So,
absolutely, but this was pretty brazen.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just saying that most people wouldn't rise to the level of that, but I'm just, you know, putting in perspective. Well, Tim, it was great to have you back, and next week I hope we have something planned just as great as Tom Jensen.
Yes.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep.
Great to have you back, Tim.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.